You're listening to Design Atlas Season 4.
Have you ever wondered if art could transcend its traditional boundaries and delve into the realms of science, ecology, and environmental activism? In a world where the lines between disciplines blur, bioart emerges as a captivating intersection of creativity and scientific exploration. We recently had the privilege of speaking with Elena Sotorakis, a Brooklyn-based artist, educator, and curator who is at the forefront of this innovative movement. Elena is not only a visionary artist committed to tackling critical issues such as environmental degradation, ecology, and sustainability, but she is also the founder of an avant-garde gallery focusing on bioart. In this dynamic space, Elena endeavors to bridge the gap between art and science, weaving narratives that speak to the pressing concerns of our 21st century global landscape. Through her art practice, education initiatives, and immersive workshops, Elena invites us to ponder the intricate connections between creativity and environmental responsibility. The essence of her work lies not only in the aesthetic experience it offers, but in the profound impact it can have on our understanding of the world. To Elena, community building is at the heart of her endeavors, a testament to the power of collaboration in addressing the challenges that define our era.
I grew up in the suburbs of New York City, Long Island, New York, in Glen Head in Nassau County. I was very fortunate being in a suburb of New York City. So my parents would definitely take me to museums like the Met and the Museum of Natural History. And we'd go into the city, and that had a huge impact on me. And I just could not wait until I could go to school in the city and be an adult. Growing up, I never knew about anyone having a creative art practice or design practice. And really the only option that was shared with me was really being an educator, an art educator. But since I was very young, I knew I wanted to be an artist. My dad was really good at drawing and painting, and in the basement, we had a lot of supplies.
Elena's artistic journey began with a sensory revelation. The first time she inhales the heady scent of oil paint and felt the dance of brushes on canvas. In that moment, a profound connection was forged, and she knew that the path of an artist was her calling. Growing up on Long Island, New York, surrounded by the beauty of the Long Island Sound and immersed in its enchantment of nature, Elena's artistic sensibilities were nurtured by the magical landscapes that shaped her formative years. The allure of the natural world became an integral part of her artistic identity, influencing her creative choices and inspiring a profound appreciation for the interconnectedness of art and environment.
Growing up in the late 90s on Long Island, I felt like that's when consumerism and consumption was at an all-time high. So everyone was wearing name brands and fast fashion. And so I think all that kind of got my love for nature and landscapes was in there, but then also a distaste for this new kind of way of consuming also was emerging around that time.
The transition to university marked a moment of both excitement and inner conflict, a clash between a love for academia and a growing distaste for the emerging trends in consumption. Elena vividly recalls that turning point, a time when the allure of traditional learning collided with a new paradigm of consumption. Struggle was difficult for someone deeply passionate about both the arts and sciences. The dichotomy of loving school and academia while resisting the confines of specialization presented a tough choice. In the end, driven by her multifaceted love for art and science, Elena opted for art school, where she studied both her undergraduate and graduate studies.
I went to the New York Academy of Art and studied very traditional kind of Renaissance painting techniques. And I also studied abroad in Italy, and I was very obsessed with representational, realism, that type of work. So for me, going to art school where I could study where I had 6-hour, 9-hour studio classes was really important to me. So art school was actually some of my happiest time. I really loved and excelled at. I also liked the deep dive and long periods to focus on things. I don't know if you guys feel the same way with your creative practices, but that 45-minute art class switching, even though I had an amazing high school art teacher who really encouraged me and inspired me, her name was Eileen Walk, I felt art school was the right path. So from art school, I came out of art school and I was really interested in doing like landscape painting and painting on site. I'd go hiking and paint with a cigar box. And I was painting in a very like kind of traditional like Turner Hopper kind of way.
Around the years of 2014 and 2015, a profound existential shift took place within her creative process. The discomfort with her own work became palpable, a realization that unfolded as she grappled with the dissonance between the romantic, beautiful landscapes she was painting and the harsh realities of the 21st century landscape unfolding in the world around her. During this period of introspection, Elena recognized the need for a substantial change in her artistic direction. The disconnect between her art and the pressing issues of the contemporary world became a catalyst for transformation. The landscape she once painted with a romantic brush now felt out of sync with the urgency and challenges of the 21st century.
I was filing a lot of environmental scientists and learning a lot about the environment and climate change and feeling like, wow, if my work's not in dialogue with 21st century issues, I don't think I'm doing the best work that I can be doing. And then I started really collaging and adding waste and debris into my landscapes. And so I started, because I thought that juxtaposition was really jarring and had a lot of impact. So that's when I kind of made the shift into environmental work and kind of activist kind of themes and dialogues that I was trying to create and facilitate with my work. My studio practice is definitely documenting, like, this is what we've done with our throwaway society and not thinking about e-waste and different streams and thinking about how we export waste to, developing nations and just kind of thinking, like, asking people to be more thoughtful about those types of things. But then, I mean, the main thing that now with like my curation and exhibitions and other things that I'm doing is just really cultivating stewardship for the natural world and creating, I really want people to see humans as not, as having a symbiotic relationship with nature, not one of domination. That's something I think a lot about, like how do we learn to live peacefully in coexistence with the divine, kind of infinite wisdom of nature?
From harnessing the principles of biomimicry to embracing the ethos of circular economies, these pioneers seamlessly blend science, design, and art in their practices. Elena delved into the immersive experience of spending time with these biodesigners. A sense of hope for the future emerged.
The more I spend with biodesigners who are using biomimicry and all of these different methods and thinking about circular economies with design and art, their art practices, I think that's made me really hopeful for the future and like building those communities and issuing in those values and just changing, like, becoming like interspecies world building and not making it like human centric, human dominated worlds, and just like kind of highlighting the beauty of things like slime mold, who is very smart, and engineers, you know, follow their creativity and their designs, and just thinking about alternative ways of creating that instill those values.
In a secluded studio, Elena passionately embraces eco-friendly creativity, experimenting with unconventional materials like avocado seeds to produce vibrant natural dyes. She expresses a profound interest in sustainable artistry, not having debuted any new work, but having a narrative that transforms overlooked elements into captivating hues. Her studio became a sanctuary for conscious artistic expression, where discarded elements found new purpose, and each stroke on the canvas spoke of a commitment to a future where art and sustainability seamlessly coexist, echoing the timeless dance between creativity and the evolving palette of nature.
Well, one thing that I'm able to, I feel like, do sustainably is with packing and crating and shipping. I'm able to reuse all those materials and not use peanuts and be really careful about that. And I'm starting to look at mycelium alternatives to packing materials for my studio practice. I've also been experimenting. I haven't made any new work that I've debuted with this, but I've been playing around a lot with natural dyes and that's and pigments. So that's something that interests me greatly. You can boil like avocado seeds and get a beautiful pink dye, and walnut, chestnuts make a black inky dye. And there's also some companies like Spirulina that run by Elliot Roth, and he makes these gorgeous blue pigment out of spirulina, and it's called Spira. So just thinking about ways of doing that. But as an oil painter, I mean, it's definitely, I do use some really toxic materials that I kind of make me uncomfortable sometimes. So I do sometimes switch out terpenoid for safflower oil, but sometimes it just doesn't do what I need it to do. So, but I would say for painters, one thing that you can do, because oil paint for me is just like my jam. I love it so much. It would be hard for me to get rid of that material out of my practice. But I will say, you know, one thing I do is to never dispose of terpenoid or turpentine. I always reuse it and let the pigment fall to the bottom, and I strain it out and just reuse it and reuse it until it's done.
With an unwavering resolve, Elena shared an unconventional practice, never disposing of toxic waste. Instead, incorporating it into her artwork, expressing a poignant concern for the well-being of fellow artists and the environment. She acknowledged the inherent toxicity of these materials. Elena also mentioned health risks faced by aging artists, particularly sculptors working with substances like resin. The artist speaks with a place of awareness, citing instances where fellow creators have suffered severe health issues due to the materials they employ, underscoring the often overlooked human and environmental toll of artistic practices.
So Beyond Earth is a three-person art collective with me, Elena Sodorakis, Rochelle Gribble, based on the West Coast, and Yoko Shimizu, who's a Japanese bio artist and researcher, but also works in Linz, Austria at the Ars Electronica Museum. And she created a future lab, which is a bio lab within the museum, which is pretty amazing. And so the three of us connected over BioVat. I met the two of them through the gallery, and we all had a real love and imaginative projects that we wanted to do around aerospace and art. But the main thing I want to emphasize is that Beyond Earth is an art collective that's dedicated to bringing a feminist perspective to space exploration, an anti-colonial perspective to space exploration. So we don't want these like billionaires, these phallic rockets just taking over, you know, colonizing the moon and putting a Costco on the moon. And that what happened is like all of us, so a lot of times people think that space exploration and art and environmentalism are like at odds. And I actually don't believe that. And I think that they actually help one another. And so just a few reasons that I think it does is that seeing Earth from afar, from like Frank White calls it overview effect. That's like such a big part of our inspiration.
Elena delves into the remarkable capacity of DNA, which can store vast amounts of information, measured in terabytes, expressing the potential to encapsulate the entirety of Earth's knowledge within the intricate structure of DNA, the practicality of using DNA as a lightweight carrier for sending information into space becomes apparent, aligning with the consideration of cost-intensive payloads. The exploration of these cutting-edge concepts reveals a fascinating intersection of science, information, technology, and space exploration.
The DNA capsule can last for thousands of years, like hundreds of thousands of years. DNA is the basic building blocks of life on Earth. So we thought that that was a good way to like communicate a message rather than a hard drive or something with planned obsolescence. Like I think we thought that that would make more sense. So we do projects like that.
In the vibrant heart of Brooklyn, within the walls of BioVat, a captivating narrative unfolds at the intersection of art and biotechnology, guided by the visionary curator, Elena. BioVat, nestled in the Brooklyn Army Terminal, isn't merely a biotech lab. It's a synthesis of innovation and aesthetics, born from the collaborative efforts of Sunny Downstate and the Economic Development Corporation.
envision a space where scientific exploration converges with artistic expression. And a beautiful lobby reminiscent of a blue chip gallery sets the stage for a unique fusion of disciplines. Here, in these moments between lab construction and scientific endeavors, Elena steps in, transforming the unutilized spaces into canvases for art exhibition. In this unconventional marriage of creativity and technology, Elena's curated exhibitions breathe life into the otherwise sterile environment, turning Biobat into a dynamic testament to the harmonious coexistence of art and biotech, where each element complements and enriches the other.
What happened is they reached out to my co-founder, Janine Bardo, who's also a local artist, and I to see what kind of art activations we could do. But because I've been working with environmentalism and like climate scientists, I've been following many, many artists at the intersection of art and science. And I started to really get into bio art, which is, you know, art using, which is a new contemporary art form where artists are using living materials and plants and organisms or referencing these things in their art. And so I came up with the idea of launching a bio art gallery, a dedicated bio art gallery in a biotech incubator, and creating programming where we have dialogues with the labs and created artist residencies and exhibitions. And so that's been like a huge project of mine, because I think that's a great way to communicate the sciences, to show that art and design are an equal to the sciences as well, to put that A in STEAM, and to also create a cultural space in an underserved part of New York City, which I think is really important, because growing up around, I mean, not growing up there, but being living there as an adult artist, there weren't that many exhibitions. And like I would always have to go to like Bushwick or Williamsburg or Park Slope, or you know, so to have something in that neighborhood is really important. So when we launched it, I thought it would be successful, but I couldn't believe, you know, all the academics from around the world that were like contacting me and people, because there aren't very many dedicated bio art galleries in the world and in the country. So because we were doing something very novel, we launched in 2019. You know, I've had an amazing opportunity to work with some of the world's leading bio artists, like Suzanne Anker, who runs the SVA Bio Art Lab. And we did an exhibition with the Mexican government called Common Frequencies, where we showed leading Mexican bio artists like Gilberto Esperanza and Tanya Candiani. And then that show was bilingual, because most of the people who live in Sunset Park are Spanish speaking. We normally do one large format exhibition a year, because the space is 18,000 square feet. So you can imagine it's not easy to put a show up and then have rotating shows. And we also found that the long format exhibitions with many iterations of like talks and workshops and residencies and different things like that work better, because then we can get all the university students, public schools. So we normally have like one large show a year, so we don't have a lot of changeover. So because of that, I have a long list of artists who have sent applications or shared their work, and just through social media and following Instagram. And I don't know, I'm always like watching to see. I love demo days. I love going.
In the spring of 2024, Biobat will emerge as a dynamic stage for a transformative collaboration. A new tenant, the Interstate Environmental Commission, will take residence in the space. Known as the Urban Shores Exhibition, it's an exploration that casts a spotlight on the intricate waterways cradling the landscapes of New York City, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Notably, the talented artist Yoko Shimizu becomes an integral part of this narrative. Her creative prowess transcends conventional boundaries as she endeavors to translate scientific data into visual masterpieces. In this intersection of art and environmental consciousness, the Urban Shores exhibition promises to be a mesmerizing journey through the nexus of science and creativity at Biobat.
Most of my inspiration, I think it's just like being a disturbed viewer of the news and like just flipping through the New York Times or Nat Geo or all these things and just seeing them. And then they get into my mind when I'm like digesting and processing all this climate kind of instability and fear. You know, it's very disturbing. So I think it's also a form of sublimination. It kind of feels I don't know. Well, now we're talking about climate change and environmental degradation much more than we were when I started making those works. But I remember just like being really concerned, everything about the like wedding industrial complex, the baby industrial, you know, like just the amount of consumerism that was being like pushed down our throats and taking that waste and those magazines and those catalogs that come in the mail that normally I throw away. I started like actually repurposing them and trying to show them in a different light so that, and I think adopting like a minimalist, I'm pretty minimalistic, and I think like thinking about how many items we have and what we're consuming and why, and just being a little more thoughtful about those things. I think that is the future, which is exciting to see that shift. And then also one shift that I'm very excited about, and I don't know if you guys have encountered this, but people and designers, and they're doing this with Yoko Shimizu at the Future Lab, but trying to interface directly with plants and computers and not having like external hard drives and e-waste and all this planned obsolescence.
In the somber echoes of the pandemic, a profound reflection emerged. COVID halted the world, urging contemplation on the possibility of a necessary pause once again, and perhaps in the not-so-distant future. Though the details may have required further contemplation, the concept resonated. An intentional pause for the globe, a shared experience uniting humanity in a common cause. As we navigated these musings, the idea took shape. A potential beacon guiding us toward a harmonious coexistence between our actions and the health of our cherished Earth.
Oh, and one thing that we really wanted to highlight was also that not everyone was having the same COVID experience. People in higher socioeconomic, categories were able to stay home, or other workers were not. And so that was a big thing that we wanted to capture. What about all the people that didn't have the luxury to stay home, and the people that had to go to work, and the people that were living in multi-generational families?
In the realm of creative endeavors, a reassuring mantra echoes: it's okay to fail. Embracing this mindset, Elena found joy in the audacious and the challenging. Whether immersed in the projects of Beyond Earth or other ventures, a particular thrill arose from conceiving wildly ambitious goals, only to embark on the journey of achieving them. A vivid memory surfaced. Gathered with Yoko and Michelle, the three of them dared to dream big. The mission: to craft feminist artworks that would transcend our earthly confines and voyage into space. It was a bold endeavor, an audacious aspiration, acknowledging the possibility of failure, but driven by the exhilaration of pushing boundaries and challenging the norm. In the tapestry of Elena's creative pursuits, this willingness to embrace the audacious and the uncertain remains a cherished principle, a testament to the beauty found in the pursuit of the extraordinary.
Sounded so improbable, but then like 6 months later we were able to do it. And so I think that I love like a good challenge, and I love the comfort, like finding comfort in discomfort and just being okay. It's okay to fail. It's okay to, I mean for every BioBet art space, there's other projects that did not come to fruition. There's a lot of great ideas that don't always see the light of day, but I always keep them. And then I might revisit them. I think like having like a common journal or something where you're like capturing all of your ideas and just spending a lot of time alone in quiet to just like think and be bored a little bit.
As we conclude this insightful episode with Elena Sotirakis, her passion for bridging the realms of art and science shines brightly.
Through her projects at BioBat and Beyond Earth, Elena has not only curated spaces of creativity within the scientific landscape, but has also embraced the audacious underscoring of transformative power of collaboration. Elena's journey exemplifies a harmonious existence between art and science, proving that the intersection of these worlds can birth innovation and inspire new perspectives.
As we look to the future, Elena's visionary approach leaves us with the belief that the most extraordinary endeavors often arise when we dare to think beyond the conventional, embracing the beauty found in the unexplored spaces where art and science converge. For more information about Elena Sotirakis, visit our website, designatlesspod.com. Don't forget to follow our show on Instagram at designatlesspod or join our Slack community. All these details and more can be found in the show notes of this episode. Love what we're doing on Design Atlas? Make sure to give us a positive review on your favorite podcast streaming platform. We'd really appreciate your support. You're listening to Design Atlas, Season 4.